The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, May 14th, 2021. Producing is Travis Rockle, who is pinch hitting for Taylor Schwenk. Probably lying incapacitated on some beach in the Outer Banks today. I'm Buster Olney, and I'm working from my home office in New York before flying west today for a Sunday night game between the Red Hot Cardinals and the San Diego Padres. And Travis, we do this. Somebody comes on the show, we got to hear about who's your team and who is your guy, who is your favorite player when you were growing up.
So I'm an Indians fan, and favorite guy was Travis Fryman or Kenny Lofton.
Wow. Yeah, my son's been playing the show, and he's got Kenny Lofton on his team, and he's like, this guy is really good.
He was fun to watch out in the outfield. I mean, any ball out there, you just assumed he would come down with it.
Yeah, remember that Spider-Man catch he made over center field?
Yes.
Back in Jacobs Field?
I have a bobblehead of one of his catches where he's going up against the wall to come down with it.
That probably is the one, you know?
Yeah.
That was definitely the famous one from the 1990s. All right, some news and notes as we get started today. ESPN and Major League Baseball announced a 7-year contract extension Thursday. We'll see the network carry 30 regular season games per year, plus wild card games. The deal, which runs through 2028, allows ESPN to show 25 weeks of Sunday Night Baseball, and the Major League Baseball Little League Classic. It will also have an opening night game and the Home Run Derby around the All-Star game. ESPN can show alternate versions of each game, such as the popular StatCast broadcast on ESPN2. And we're going to be doing a lot of playoff games. Certainly our company's rooting for that extra round to be agreed to by the players and by Major League Baseball. Philadelphia Phillies catcher JT Realmuto has been placed on the COVID-related injury list. This was before Thursday's game against Washington. Manager Joe Girardi told reporters, all of his tests are fine. You can't let someone with a stomach ache and a small fever walk around your clubhouse these days. In a normal year, you wouldn't worry about it, but you can't do that now. Atlanta Braves star Ronald Acuna Jr. had to leave the Braves games with an ankle injury on Thursday, but x-rays were negative. The Braves were not as lucky with outfielder Christian Pache, who is gone to the injured list with a hamstring strain. Ender Inciarte has been called up in his place. Albert Pujols was officially released by the Los Angeles Angels after clearing waivers on Thursday after he was designated for assignment. Yankee shortstop Gleyber Torres tested positive for COVID after being vaccinated after getting COVID last year. He is the Yankees' 8th COVID-related case to develop this week. Yankees manager Aaron Boone talked yesterday about his concern about the influx of COVID cases.
We've been concerned every day. I guess there is still concern. I think the one positive right now for us is that today was the first day of no new cases, so all saliva tests from yesterday that have come back in today were all negative, and that's the first day that that's happened. I hope is good news, and hopefully means we're moving in the right direction. Certainly we won't know that for sure, obviously. We will get some PCR testing back later this evening as well, and then obviously more saliva test results tomorrow, where hopefully we continue to have no new positives and start to move in the right direction and out of this.
Tampa Bay won the final game of that series. In Seattle, the Mariners saw the debut of Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert, two of baseball's best prospects, but the story turned out to be Zach Plesac, who carried a no-hitter for the Indians into the bottom of the 8th inning.
Here's the windup, and the 1-2 on the way to Crawford. Swung on, line drive over the head of the shortstop, Rosario, and into center field, a base hit. And J.P. Crawford spoils the no-hit bid for Zach Plesac.
That sound from 7-10, ESPN Seattle. The Indians win that game 4-2. The Astros beat the Rangers 4-3, walk-off style.
Ready and waiting for the 1-2 from Martin. Here it comes. In the dirt, hops to the left of Heim. Here comes Straw. The throw to the plate, not in time. Astros win 4-3 and 11. Ball spurted to the left of Jonah Heim, a breaking ball in the dirt, maybe 10 feet away from him, and Straw scampered home.
That from KBME 790 AM. The Blue Jays and the Braves play. The Blue Jays looking for a sweep, and Bo Bichette helped them get that.
And he lines the ball into right center field, and this one is getting to the fence.
Jansen in to score. Semien around third. He will score. It's a two-run double for Bichette, and it is 6-4 Blue Jays.
That sound from Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Nationals and the Phillies. And Josh Bell, generally speaking, has got off to a slow start, but he had a good day on Thursday.
And the pitch swung on. Belted to deep right field. Way, way, way out of here. Gone. Goodbye. A tremendous home run. Hit to the second deck in section 240. Bang, zoom goes Bell.
That from the Nationals Radio Network. The Giants just continue to roll. They beat the Padres 3-1, taking the lead in the top of the fifth inning.
There's been little offense in this game. And Duggar slams one to right. Hit very well, very well, and out of here. Duggar goes right center field, and the Giants take the lead.
That sound from KNBR. The Giants in this game recorded their 15th save of the season, most in Major League Baseball. And the St. Louis Cardinals, playing so well, faced the Milwaukee Brewers, and newcomer Nolan Arenado got a hit for them in the top of the first.
Arenado waits the first pitch, and he swings and grounds it through the hole at short into left field for an RBI single. Edmund scores, and it's 1-0 Cardinals.
That from the Cardinals Radio Network. During the course of that game, Milwaukee Brewers right-hander Corbin Burns set the record for strikeouts without a walk to start the season Thursday, extending that mark to 58 before issuing a walk in the fifth inning. We're going to be talking with Lance Lynn of the Chicago White Sox today about how underrated he thinks the White Sox are. Todd Radom will be here for the weekly quiz, and Jessica Mendoza will join us to talk about everything going on around baseball. Before we get to all that, the NBA play-in tournament is happening May 18th through the 21st. It's a new, exciting twist to determine who makes the playoffs in both conferences. The 7th through 10th place teams vying for the 7th and 8th spots. Some teams are currently playing to avoid the tournament. Others are desperately trying to get in. At the end of the regular season, the 7th and 8th place teams square off. The winner gets locked into the 7th seed. The loser plays the winner of the game between the 9th and 10th place teams. The winner of that game clinches the 8th seed. ESPN is your home for all the drama, Wednesday, May 19th and Friday, May 21st. And keep up with all that drama as the postseason picture is settled by listening to the Hoop Collective, the Woj Pod, the Low Post, and Jalen and Jacoby wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst on ESPN baseball broadcast. And Jess, last night you were watching the Seattle Mariners and the debut of Jared Kelnick. What do you think? First impressions.
You know, it's funny, the anticipation, especially I live in the Pacific Northwest. This is like holiday, right? Like here it comes. And this happens for so many teams. But I mean, he's definitely one that I think, and you've talked about it a lot, even this week on the podcast, because of the big trade from the Mets. So I feel like it's one of those like cross country stories. There's a lot of eyeballs from New York, all over the country, but especially New York and out here in the Northwest, you know, ready for, in the anticipation of his arrival to the Seattle Mariners. He was 0-for-4, but I was watching the game live. We had it on. And, you know, first of all, you know, Zach Plesac took a no hitter into the eighth inning. So he was like, to have a night to come up, you know, when Zach was throwing like crazy stuff, you know, his off speed, everything that he was throwing. But to Jared's credit, the first pitch of his first at bat, he swings and it looks, I mean, he crushes a ball Taylor Naquin ends up making a diving catch into the stands to get him out. But every ball he hit was hard. I liked the approach, and you could just see from him, Buster, the confidence. Like, it was just coming out of him. And I mean, I imagine if I'm in those shoes and anyone that's there, it's, I mean, your heart is pounding, you want so much, you end up seeing guys that can't even see straight and they're swinging at balls they have no business doing. He had none of that. Great approach, great at bats. Doesn't matter if you're 0-4, 4-4, I think for the Mariners to see, he already was taking big league at bats. I mean, he was on fire. And it doesn't surprise me. He was hitting almost 400 before he came up, but just his approach and coming out swinging early and hit the ball hard.
It really jumped out at me in spring training when we had that story in USA Today where he ripped the Mariners for service time manipulation.
Yeah.
When I read it, my first thing was, oh, this guy's got some swag. Like, this is a young player who definitely has that great competitive arrogance.
No, he absolutely does. And he's been doing that radio show too for MLB Network Radio, where he comes on once a week to kind of take people through the minor leagues, you know, talk about, you know, the process, you know, his ability to have and say the thing that everyone knows. And obviously because of everything that was already said within the Mariners organization. But I mean, I heard you even talking to Jeff yesterday. It's frustrating when no one says the truth, which is not that he needs more time in the minors. That could have been 5% of it, but the bulk of it really is the fact that they wanted to manipulate his service time. And that's just the case for all of these prospects that you see that never get to get called up. I mean, the fact that he wasn't in the top 26 to be brought up in the first place, everyone knows the reason why. And so he addressed it, but then you got to back it with, you know, hey, I deserve to be there. It's ridiculous that it's service time. And then he went on and just tore it up in the minor league. So he's someone that can talk it and walk it, which I think is hard at a younger age and with all the following and attention and eyeballs on him. You know, even though he didn't come out hitting home runs and, you know, going 4-for-4, you could tell his presence in the batter's box. He's got the swag.
So among the notes that you sent me about topics you want to talk to this week is Tim Tebow. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm nodding my head because I wanted to hear your perspective. Because I got to tell you, since we got word that he signed with the Jacksonville Jags, it so much reminds me of when he signed to play in the minors with the Mets, where people are losing their minds over this. Just merely signing a contract in the spring to play for the Jags. And, you know, at the time he signed with the Mets, I had my objection about it was any media member who was pretending that he was a legitimate prospect. That bothered me. Like when people would talk about, well, you know, could he break in and what numbers could he put in the big leagues? Oh, stop. But it was also ridiculous, I thought, that anyone would have an objection to Tim Tebow playing professionally. Like he was taking some time away from somebody else. That was absurd to me. I don't know, Tim. You know, Tim. What was your perspective?
Just, I mean, how much respect I have for him, because the amount of criticism, and I was there with the Mets when he, you know, would come out there, and the amount, to your point, of media. And I mean, this is the Mets, right? So like when we're talking about the amount of media, I mean, there's already a lot of media. It's not like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden the media showed up. It was like people you had never seen before, the amount of cameras, every person ripping him one way or another. Did you see that swing? Did you see how he threw? Like, he's a football player. He shouldn't be here. Like, just tons and tons. And I'm standing there just watching a guy that's putting himself out there because he has a love for something, and there's a deep desire to say, you know what, I have to at least try. There was nothing about Tim Tebow that was like, oh, I'm going to be a big leaguer. It was, there is something inside of him that was like, I've always wanted to do this. And if you had the opportunity, like I asked so many people that are sitting there at home going, this is ridiculous. How could he come and try out or even, you know, think that he could play with the Mets or the Jaguars? But I look at it differently, and that if he makes it or if he doesn't, the fact is he is putting himself out there because he can and because he absolutely has a desire to test himself, knowing that he could fail, absolutely knowing, but he's never going to quit. Like I heard people this week saying he'll retire in training camp with the Jaguars. There is nothing inside of Tim Tebow that would ever quit. Either he's going to get cut or he is going to get injured. Like that is like the only reason that he will not make it. It is not because he will ever quit. And I respect people that are like that, Buster, because you are incredibly vulnerable to put yourself out in the amount of media attention that Tim Tebow brings. As we all know, he's fearless with it because there is a part of him. And if I think if anyone had the opportunity to play in the NFL, even after 9 seasons of not playing, you would do it. And maybe a lot of people wouldn't because of the criticism. Honestly, most people probably wouldn't, but they wouldn't do it because they would say, oh, you know what? I probably will never make it. I mean, that's just not the right attitude. So I'm not going to break down his football skills at tight end because that's not my area of expertise. But as far as the person, I think people really need to look at the fact that what he is doing is incredibly hard. And I give him so much respect for facing all the negative because there are few people out there that are saying he can do it and he doesn't care because he believes in himself. And I think that's a great message for kids. I think it's a great message for adults to understand if there's something deep down that you need to go scratch that itch, like go do it, even if the critics and everyone around you is telling you you can't.
And let me make this clear. And I'm with you. I covered the NFL for 1 year, but I don't know anything about it. My gut is, just as it was that he was never going to play in the big leagues or be a factor in the big leagues, my instinct is he's never going to play this year. But here's the thing, and I'm curious, because again, you got to know him and I didn't. You've seen the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, right?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, that totally undercuts my theory.
I should have lied.
It was Jimmy Stewart going to Washington with this politician with a pure heart. And he was going there and he was going to try to do the right thing. That's Tim Tebow. I kind of love the fact that Tim Tebow doesn't care what I think or doesn't care what anybody else thinks. He's just going to go and try. And, you know, I think that's awesome. And the idea that he's taking opportunity away from somebody else, give me a break. And here's the other part that I think we also need to factor in. And you know this because, you know, you were with the Mets for a year. We cannot underestimate the impact that he had on people around him as he was going through this. I'm not saying it helped the Mets win a World Series or anything like that. But on a day in and day out basis, the people around Tim Tebow are going to feel his work ethic and they're going to feel his optimism. Yes?
Sure. And that absolutely. And honestly, he's different. So it's not like your straight up leadership, like how you expected. I mean, obviously you saw how he would lead, you know, on the field at Florida, but there is this, when you're opening yourself up, when you are, hey, everyone, here I am ready to fail, putting myself out there. He shares every part of who he is, which is such a rare human quality. Like that is leadership in a way that like people are like, all right, he's as real as you can possibly be. And it allows you to be okay with like, you know what? I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to try the things. And I have to say this too with Urban Meyer, like this is like the second part of it is I think there's a huge piece to this where he wants his own guys. Like he knows Tim Tebow better than anyone. And I mean, think of how scared, vulnerable Urban Meyer is and doing something for the first time. And I think people don't realize that having one of your own players doesn't mean he's going to start, doesn't even mean he's going to play. But in that clubhouse, in there, understanding the players, being able to read personalities, know who the dudes are, know who the weak links are, like having Tim Tebow around that Jaguars team is gold for Urban Meyer, whether he plays or not. So I think that's the other side of things that I think people don't realize is it's not just that he's this guy and he's helping him out. Tim is going to help Urban out way more than Urban is helping Tim Tebow out.
Yeah, when he was with the Mets, what you heard from people within the organization was he didn't ask for special favors. He didn't ask for special treatment. He just went and did his work. And in the end, he wasn't very good and he wasn't good enough to play in the big leagues. But you know what? He also tried. And he's going to try to play for the Jags. And it might be that it doesn't work out and he gets cut, but Tim is going to give it a shot. All right. Let's talk about the Atlanta Braves, a really rough week. They learned that Mike Soroka had a setback as he comes back from the Achilles tendon injury last year. He's going to have exploratory surgery next week. We don't know when he's going to pitch. They got swept by the Toronto Blue Jays this week. And something is beginning to jump out at me, Jess, about Ronald Acuña Jr. I want to ask you about it. You know, Dustin Pedroia, when he played, you loved how aggressively he was. You loved his enthusiasm, but you also kind of wondered, boy, this guy, it gets dinged up because of the style of play. And it feels like at least once or twice a week, we see something of Ronald Acuña Jr. where he's flying. He's running as hard as he can, and then he gets dinged up. Yesterday, he turned his ankle, hitting first base, I think with his toe turned downward, and he had to leave the game. And now there's a question today whether or not he's going to be okay. It feels like we've already had like four or five of those this year.
And that's, I mean, that's exactly what you expect from a player that plays like that. But I mean, I'll take that any day, every day. It's refreshing because, I mean, and we're seeing that, I think, across the league this year, just with stolen bases. I mean, I heard, you know, this week you're laughing earlier with the Astros, like it was a squeeze bunt, like a squeeze bunt, like, you know, you're seeing just more, you know, like short game speed, like utilizing like the importance of getting to the next base and not just, hey, I need to crush balls and be able to jog around the bases. And that's all it's about. It's how can you steal another bag? When I say that, like not the classic stolen base, but if you can hustle and just like dive, you can read a pitch, you can do anything that's possible to be able to get that extra base that's given to you, which really is a ton that you'll see in baseball if players are looking for it. Now, with that comes, because you're playing 162 games, you're playing every single day, is your body's going to hurt. You're going to get banged up. And, you know, as long as it's not a serious injury for Acuña, I love what he's doing right now. And I hope he keeps it up. He might hurt, hurt his ankle a little bit, be out 5-6 days, get banged up, get a bruise here and there. I'm hoping it's nothing ever serious, because if he can just do that, be out a little bit, come right back and show and continue to play that game, I mean, that's how baseball should be played.
What about the Braves? Are you worried about them after winning back-to-back-to-back division titles?
I'm not worried about them. I mean, I feel like similarly to the Dodgers right now, like just the amount of talent, and I get it with, you know, some of the bad news, Soroka, as you mentioned, you know, I don't think it's as detrimental just because of all their starting pitching that they still have. I felt the same way with Dustin May, you know, when he was out for the season, because I think this team, you know, even we're in May, if this was July, I think I'd be a lot more concerned. But the talent, you just look up and down these lineups, you look at who they have, you know, in their rotations, you know, I get that they're like big, huge hiccups right now, but these are two way too talented teams to be where they're at right now. And I still believe, and I keep throwing the Dodgers in there because we're talking about them also so much. And I think it's very similar to the Braves because of the expectation, obviously the Dodgers a lot higher. But when we come, I think midsummer heading into the back end of the season, these two teams are going to be competing for the division and ultimately be huge contending teams in the playoffs for the National League.
And before you go, tell me what you think about the team that swept the Braves, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Gosh, just watching them hit. I mean, you look at some of their offensive numbers. And I mean, I get that they're pitching too. I mean, Stripling had a nice night last night, and Ryu's been really coming back. But I mean, in a time right now, I think league average, I have to check like every day. So like, you know, batting averages are just above 200. And I mean, numbers are incredibly low. If you look at like Bo Bichette's hitting 277, Vlad Guerrero's hitting 307. Hernandez is hitting 304. Grichuk is 275 with Gurriel. I mean, just the numbers of their offense and the way that they're performing, let alone Marcus Semien, who has been super hot. He had kind of a slower start, but he has been red hot these last few weeks. This is such a fun team to watch. I think they don't get the attention they deserve because there's so many, and this is like the case for the Blue Jays always. But if you can't, I don't care if you're a fan or not, if you even watch the AL East, turn on a game of the Blue Jays, because you talk about a young athletic team that is doing things that other teams in all of baseball aren't with the way that their offense is running right now. And not that I'm neglecting, I know I'm neglecting the other side, but I just love watching this team play.
And wait till they get George Springer back and on the top of the lineup and rolling too. So they're an interesting team. The American League East it looks like it's going to be interesting all summer. All right, Jess, thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks, Buster.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Lance Lynn pitches for the Chicago White Sox, off to a great start. Five outings, a 1.52 ERA. Lance, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I you know, love talking to you. You know, your 10th season in the big leagues this year, you got 107 wins, you're coming up on 1,500 innings, and something about you that has never changed since the first time I talked with you, you are straightforward. You yeah. are no BS. Tell me where you think that comes from.
It definitely comes from my dad. When I was growing up, I was with him a lot. He pretty much raised me, especially through, you know, through high school and all that, and there was no sugarcoating things with him. It was, we were going to tell the truth to each other, and that was how it was going to be. And we respected each other, and I find that that was the best way to do things instead of trying to, you know, hide things or something like that. We were just honest with each other, and it made things run smooth.
Give me an example of that, when he was just dead honest with you as your dad and giving you some advice or some thoughts about something that was happening in your life.
You know, he was just, I think there was a couple games in high school where it was like, hey, you leaving stuff on the field. And I was like, Dad, I was 2-for-3 with 2 homers and I struck out 10 today. He goes, yeah, but you tried to hit a 3rd home run in the last bat and struck out because you gave up. And it was just one of those things where he made sure I was always accountable and I was always doing everything I was capable of and never giving anything away.
All right. So given that that's your nature, I want to just have a fun baseball conversation with you on some things that are topical right now around the game and just get your perspective on trends and things that are going on in the game. Let's start with this. What do you think when you hear the phrase launch angle?
I think, yeah, swing higher so I can throw it by you. No, but you look at some of how things work and it's like there's certain areas where you want that the ball in the air so you can drive it and do things like that. So it makes sense, but I think there's also a fine line where you got to make good contact and take good swings. I worry that as kids start coming up, they start trying to hit the ball straight up in the air and, you know, they really don't develop a swing that can create good contact and then grow into it and then go into the being able to drive the ball and lift it as they get older and stronger and more developed. So it kind of scares me with maybe the way that the youth's being treated and taught to play the game. So that's going to be the next phase that hopefully they still get taught how to actually swing the bat and have proper mechanics and then learn as they get older and stronger to drive the ball and do things of that nature.
You're on the other end of those swings, and I'm curious, have there been moments when, you know, a hitter gets in the box, maybe it's the first time you're seeing him, and you see a swing, and you're like, oh, okay, I got this. Like, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're starting to see it. I guess I came in the game, like you said, 10 years ago, and it was all about sinkers and cutters. And then it turned into four-seamers and you know, and big wipeout curveballs. So the game kind of goes in waves. You got to be able to do multiple things. And it's one thing that I've taken in, you know, as we've gone here, guys are starting to try to lift the ball, and then your sinker and cutter becomes more playable. And I was glad I was able to do that early on in my career and develop those. And I still have the ability to elevate and do things like that with my four-seamer. So hopefully that bodes well for me in the future and playing for a long time.
What do you think about the idea? You've been a starting pitcher, of course, in your career. What do you think about the idea of an opener, the relief pitchers to start a game, and the high use of relief pitchers we're seeing in baseball now?
You know, I'm old school in the manner of that I absolutely hate it, to be honest with you. But that's also like there's – if you don't have five starters, I guess you're trying to do everything you can to win a ball game. So I respect it in that manner, but – I also think that we need to develop starters so we have them. I remember growing up, you watch the game, you wanted to watch Roger Clemens versus Curt Schilling. Like, those are the games I enjoyed growing up. I watched, and it kept me, like, into the game and watching it. I wanted to see how deep a starter could go. I love the cat and mouse. You know, the third time through the lineup, you've already seen me twice, but I'm going to get after it, and we're going to actually compete against each other and see what each other has. So, that's how I was brought up. That's how I enjoy watching the game. And that's what I try to do when I take the mound.
I agree with you. We talked about it on the podcast before. I growing up, I felt like the starting pitchers, you know, when I was young, you had Tom Seaver, you had Bob Gibson, and then you get Oral Hershiser, Fernando Valenzuela, Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez. You know, you guys are like the Hulk Hogans of the sport. And I think it's important for the sport to keep the starting pitchers preeminent.
Oh, definitely. And I think you're starting to see that back in the playoffs again. Like, starters are starting to take over again. And you're going to see as the seasons go on and relievers get, abused like they have been recently, it's going to start getting to the playoffs where the starters are going to have to do more because, you know, they got guys that are out or, you know, not as sharp as they can be because they don't use the starters enough during the regular season to keep guys fresh. So, like I said, with the hitting thing, I think this is a wave that, as pitchers grow and stuff like that, we're going to have to get back to being able to throw 6-7 innings and throw 100 pitches and actually be able to, you know, pitch and have different roles and use the relievers in a way that, isn't killing them.
And you led perfectly into my next question. How do you feel about this, absolute wave of relievers who all throw 100 miles per hour every pitch they're trying to throw as hard as they can?
Like you said, that's the wave. That's the showcase era. You go to a showcase and say, hey, this guy throws 97 with this spin rate. Let's sign him. They don't really know if the guy can pitch or not. I was taught growing up, figure out how to get outs, and then the rest of the stuff will come. I think kids are now taught to throw the ball as hard as they can, and maybe we'll teach you how to pitch. And if not, just throw it down the middle and spin it as hard as you can. But as we know, when you get to the big leagues, if you just spin stuff right down the middle, hitters are going to hit it. So it's just one of those things where I think it's the next wave, too, of, like you said, all the showcases, really, that's how guys are getting drafted. That's how guys are getting on maps. People don't really care if they can actually get outs. And that's why you see a lot of guys that just throw the ball as hard as they can. So if you hone it in and do all that, then you can become quite a pitcher. So hopefully that's something that we're able to do moving forward, and the game will be, move a little quicker, and we won't have such high pitch counts and long at bats and balls and all that good stuff.
Lance, how do you feel about bat flips, which are becoming more commonplace in the sport?
To be honest with you, I enjoy them in the sense of I enjoy guys being themselves and be able to show their personality, especially in big situations. Not only to pump up, the fans, but your teammates, and to be able to come through in the clutch and show how excited you are to do what you love to do, but also at the highest level that there possibly is in this game and have success. So I enjoy it now. And then there's times where it kind of seems to be a little too much of look at me instead of the exciting of the moment. So there's a fine line, but I also think that you got to let people be themselves, show what they're about, show their personalities. And, it doesn't bother me one bit. If you want a bat flip, then do it, especially if you get me, then that's more power to you. But if I get you in a big situation, you're probably going to hear something back. And if everyone's on board with that and everybody's cool, then I'm all on board with it. Let everybody show their personalities and be themselves, because that's what this game's all about.
A lot of ideas being thrown around baseball about how to help the pace and get more action. What do you think about the idea of a pitch clock, A, and B, it was suggested maybe moving the mound back?
Yeah, I mean, the pitch clock thing, I think that a lot of these guys in the minor leagues are using it anyway, so I think the in-between pitch thing is kind of, in my opinion, it's not that you don't really look out there and say, hey, man, this guy's taking too long or anything like that. I think that's just kind of one of those things where I don't really enjoy you know, I call it a shot clock. You know, I'm a basketball guy from Indiana, so I don't really enjoy that in the game of baseball. But I also think that we do need to teach guys to work fast, throw strikes, you know, get after people and not, you know, not nibble around the zone and try to strike guys out. So I think that that's the big thing is we teach guys to throw strikes and move the ball around the plate and actually work within the strike zone instead of trying to get chases out of the strike zone all the time. I think that's the big thing. But when it comes to that, I think it would kind of take care of itself. And then 61 feet, you're trying to speed up the game and you move the thing back. Guys are already having trouble throwing strikes because all they care about is how much they spin it. I think that your walk rates are going to go up and the hitters are going to, it's going to mess up hitters just as much as it is pitchers. It could be a total disaster. Especially with your whole life, you've been taught to do these things. So, and it could create injuries, to be honest with you too. I don't really know what all it could entail, but there's all kinds of different things that could happen. Guys have been playing from the mound distance as it's been for a long time. And then you're creating something different that could be total chaos.
So before you go, I want to ask you about two new teammates that you're getting to know and you know what you learned about these two guys that you didn't know before you joined their team, Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu.
I'll start with Timmy first because, you know, he's got a little bit more of a in-your-face personality, which is awesome. I played against Tim, both of them, for a long time. And you've seen Tim kind of naturally grow into his personality, like we're talking about the bat flip, showing who he is and being, you know, just being true to himself. And you respect that so much because he's a worker. He's come from, you know, come a long way. Worked his butt off to become what he is, and he's able to show it and show how excited he is to play a game for a living and have fun with it. And I respect him a lot. And then you also, Abreu, where he's come from, you know, coming from Cuba, coming over here, coming to a new country. He's a worker, quiet, goes about his business and what he needs to get after somebody for not doing things or not playing the game hard. He's not afraid of it. He's got a lot of Albert in him. When I was in St. Louis, when I was a young kid, just seeing him work every day, take care of everyone around him without, you know, making it a spectacle. It was all business with him. So you respect that too. Two totally different kind of personalities, but those two together, when you see him having fun playing the game together, it's also fun to see those two gel. And it's definitely an awesome sight and definitely be on their team because playing against them wasn't fun at all. I know that.
Lance, you never disappoint. I always love talking with you because, like I said, I know you're gonna call like you see it. I appreciate you joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I hope I see you down the road. I said on the podcast yesterday, I think you guys right now are the most underrated team in baseball.
Yeah, well, we all offseason we're like, oh, look at the White Sox. You got Tony. They traded. They signed some guys, and then now we get no love all of a sudden again. Makes no sense to me. I guess it's because you're the other team in Chicago. Is that how it goes?
No, because I think everyone thinks they're going to be sellers, you know.
Well, they probably will be because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to pay anybody and they want to get under that tax. But, you know, we're here to win it. We got some guys hurt, but we'll get them back at the end of the year and we're going to hold the ship afloat here with our starting rotation and our bullpen. We've got some guys who are pretty talented.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America and all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how are you doing?
I'm fine, Buster. How are you this beautiful Friday morning?
It's a beautiful day. Now, out in my front yard, they're taking down this dead tree. It's been around forever with our house. And I hear chainsaws in the background. I'm surprised you can't hear them. But it kind of reminds me of what's been going on with our weekly quiz with Taylor. So I think this week, you know, it's good that Travis is stepping in to give Taylor a week to sort of compose himself. He's like the hitter who's like 0 for his last 30 and needs a little breather.
So, you know, for what you're, first of all, Buster, you're implying that there is a chainsaw massacre happening with regard to this quiz.
I did imply that. You're correct.
You were furthermore imputing the character of our friend Taylor by suggesting that he has skulked off to an undisclosed location, tail between his legs, licking wounds as he prepares for, you know, the next part of the I'm a little surprised, Buster.
Well, you took it a little further than what I meant it, but you know what? Let's go with what you just described. I think that's perfect right there.
He's fleeing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll get to this week's quiz in a moment, but let's get to this week's Forgotten Franchise. What do you got?
All right, Buster, this week We're going to talk about the National League's Baltimore Orioles of the late 19th century. So last week we discussed the Cleveland Spiders, who were eliminated from the NL in 1899. Today we're going to talk about their fellow contractees, the Baltimore Orioles, who revolutionized the game and dominated the sport, winning three consecutive pennants from 1894 to 1896. The Orioles developed and perfected inside baseball, or small ball, which emphasized aggressive play, hitting and running, bunting, stealing bases, and on occasion, blocking opposing runners from reaching base. The 1896 club reputedly hid spare baseballs in the outfield, which they snuck into play when a hit got past them. A Baltimore Sun article said that the Orioles players would sit on the bench outside the visitors' dressing room before games, Buster, filing their spikes and glaring at their opponents as they emerged. So this is a serious group of players. The Orioles were described by umpire John Heidler, who was later National League president, as, quote, mean, vicious, ready at any time to maim a rival player or an umpire if it helped their cause. The things they would say to an umpire were unbelievably vile, and they broke the spirits of some fine men. Like the Spiders, the Orioles met their demise because of what was called syndicate baseball, whereby owners were permitted to control interests in multiple clubs. In Baltimore's case, they effectively merged with the Brooklyn Superbas, today's Los Angeles Dodgers. In a single 1899 transaction, Buster, nine Baltimore players were assigned to Brooklyn, including future Hall of Famers Wee Willie Keeler, Huey Jennings, and Joe Kelly. The Orioles, along with Cleveland, Louisville, and Washington, were eliminated by the National League after the 1899 season, but their legacy remains vibrant. Six future Hall of Famers, including manager John McGraw, played for the Orioles, who are this week's forgotten franchise.
All right. I've got a question, but we're going to bypass that one. That is, how do you hide a baseball in the outfield? I guess it says something about the conditions of field at that time. I have a theory. I have a theory, and I want to see if you are willing to second my put a second on my theory. And that is that the term old school, when we talk about old school baseball, playing small ball, bunting, hitting the other way, that started with John McGraw and the Baltimore Orioles. Would you be willing to consider that possibility?
I'm already on it, Buster. It did. This is just a fact. The small ball, again, inside baseball. And you talk about the conditions of the field. The Orioles were very famous in those years for conspiring with their groundskeeper to tamp down the infield when needed, to water it when needed. And they perfected what became known as the Baltimore chop, which was a player coming up to bat and just slamming the ball into a dull infield and getting a hit as a result. So.
And not surprisingly, I think you would agree with me, guess who John McGraw, about 20, 25 years later, really resented? That would be one Babe Ruth.
Yes.
And he looked down his nose at Babe Ruth. And John McGraw, famously, when he was manager of the Giants, when one year refused to play the World Series against the American League, which he considered to be the inferior league, correct?
That is very correct, and it's a long story for another day, but part of it revolves around the fact that McGraw joined the American League when it was formed and was kind of left his situation there in Baltimore under less than good terms. And apparently he was a man who knew how to carry a vendetta, and he carried that vendetta right into 1904 when he refused to play the Boston Americans in what would have been the second World Series. So there you go.
And by the way, within the next month and a half, Tony La Russa is going to pass John McGraw for career victories for a manager. So thank you for that. I love those stories about those Baltimore Orioles. All right, Travis, let's get to this week's quiz. Todd, what do you got for us?
All right. So after we've impugned the character of our friend Taylor, Travis is going to step up, pinch hit, and he hopes to become Kirk Gibson in game one of the 1988 World Series, right? So here we go, guys. The Brewers and Braves are both saluting the late Hank Aaron with uniform tributes this season. So here's this week's question. Three different teams wore memorial sleeve patches in memory of this person all during the same season. Who was it? Was it Larry Doby? Was it Frank Robinson? Was it Sparky Anderson? Or was it Don Baylor? So the question is, again, three different teams wore memorial sleeve patches in memory of this person some time ago. Larry Doby, Frank Robinson, Sparky Anderson, or Don Baylor?
Wow. Oh, boy. Boy. You know, geez. I'll tell you what, Travis, I'll go first. You know, normally Taylor goes first because he won last year, shockingly. And that's been a disadvantage for him potentially this year. I will go first this week. I'm going to go Don Baylor.
I'm going to go with Sparky Anderson.
Well, you are both incorrect because it was Frank Robinson.
Yeah.
And that was in 2019 when the Reds, Orioles, and Cleveland Indians featured tributes to the late Frank Robinson associated with all three franchises.
Yep. That was my initial instinct. And then I changed my mind in the middle. So I'm an idiot. And Travis, you know what? You did better this week than Taylor's done.
I mean, I don't even think he actually had plans this week. And I think he just took today off to avoid being wrong again.
I would agree with you, except I saw pictures of him on a beach in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. So maybe he was just, trying to cover up his wounds with a couple of beers, you know?
Do you think he's thinking about the quiz out on the beach in, you know, North Carolina? Do you think he's considered, like right now, is there a small jolt of energy that is shooting up his spine and making him twitch, Buster?
I don't know if he is, but he will soon because I'm going to send out a tweet about this week's quiz and tag him.
Well, that'll get the job done for sure.
There we go. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys, thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, time for Bleacher Tweets. And our first one comes from Bobby Meacham. Watching Gerrit Cole and wondering when was the last time the New York Yankees had a frontline ace pitching at this level? Peak CeCe wasn't this good, 20-3. Clemens had 3.51 ERA. I love Pettit, but he was never this dominant. Was it Geraghty in 78?
Bobby, I think it was Clemens in 2000, and I covered him that year. He had a stretch, and I can't remember how many games or how long it went where he had like 12 or 13 consecutive victories. I know his final ERA wasn't as great, but remember, that was in the middle of the steroid era. And during that postseason, he came within a whisker of throwing a no-hitter. He was unbelievable. Now, a lot of the conversation about Roger that year was obscured by the bat-throwing incident and the beating of Mike Piazza. You know, the beating in the regular season, the bat throwing incident in the World Series. But that year, he was absolutely dominant.
And next one comes from Connor Burnett. The Indians are winners of 9 of their last 11 games. They're only one back from the White Sox in the AL Central. Our team batting average is .209, but our pitching staff is among the best in baseball, including our bullpen. What do you make of our team?
Travis, what do you think? You being the Indians guy.
I feel like this has been the story of the Indians the past few years, and it's they've always had strong pitching. And I mean, you look at Trevor Bauer. I mean, this has just kind of been who they are, right?
Right. You got Shane Bieber as an ace. You got a really good rotation. They're really good at developing pitching. We don't know how much offense they're going to get out of the outfield. They're competitive. They'll win 90 games. I remember during the offseason, I don't know if you saw this, but some of the win projections had them like in the 78, 82 range. I'm like, no, they're going to be better than that. You know, they might be like an 88 to 90 win team, but you as an Indians fan, probably not a lot of confidence that when we get to October that they're going to be able to compete with the big dogs, right?
No, I think most fans will have already turned the page and been focusing on the Cleveland Browns, probably. All right, so our third and last one will come from Andrew DeSalvo. We're approaching a quarter of the way through the season. How many games do analysts and evaluators like to see before they declare players or teams' performances to be legit, whether it's legit good or legit bad?
Yeah, I remember when Josh McAree was producing the show, we'd always have a laugh about this, where if the sample size, the sample results didn't fit our narrative, we'd always say, small sample size. at some point you have to acknowledge, like I remember saying earlier this year, I thought the Dodgers were going to approach some of the all-time records for single seasons in terms of victories and run differential and all that stuff. And then they started losing. And then so an idiot like me has got to step up and say, nope, I was wrong about that. I do think, you know, when you talk to baseball executives, when we get into mid-May and late May, that's when they really begin doing hard evaluations of what they have.
And that's it for Bleacher Tweets. And if anyone wants to get their tweets read, just send them in over the weekend, hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
There we go. We'll see if Taylor can actually read on Monday. Travis, thanks for pitching in today.
Well, no problem. And I feel like every time I pitch in, it's because Taylor's off drinking and having fun. I don't know how this is working out. I need to talk to the bosses and figure this out.
That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Lance, Todd, Jessica, and Travis. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.